Welcome, friend. Welcome to the temple of the dividend discount model. Here, you will learn the secrets for prudent long-term investing and to tilt the odds in the favor of the initiant who follows our techniques. Oh, all right. Enough with the silliness now. Okay, let's take a look at what we're going to study here. The dividend discount models. These models value stocks on the basis of the present value of the future dividend streams that the stock is projected to produce. Huh? Well, stick with us now. In other words, the stock's going to pay us dividends, so we want to find a way to value those dividends that we're going to receive in the future. It goes by various names: dividend valuation models, discounted cash flow models. If you recall from our previous presentation, we said that the value of a stock is based on the present value of its future cash flows. Therefore, these models should be extremely popular, right? Well, not always. During the 1990s, when the stock market went in two directions, up and way up, investors who adhered to these types of models was considered old-fashioned, fuddy-duddies, outdated. But those investors weathered the 2000 to 2002 downturn very well. Yeah, in fact, while the tech wreck, the dot-com bubble was imploding, some of these companies were actually going up. Why? Because people realized, hey, dividends don't lie. Right, so let's take a look at the... math! No, relax. It's actually a lot simpler than it looks. This is so that the mathematicians and the economists and the high-level folks can act like they really know what they're doing, and you don't. The purest incarnation is this formula here, which looks really scary. But really, all we're doing is taking the dividend in the first year, that's what D1 stands for, and dividing it by 1 plus K. What is K? Well, in baseball, it means strikeout. But in this case, it's what we are interested in terms of a return. Are we interested in 5%, 10%, 8%? That's K. It's a percentage called our expected rate of return or our required rate of return. And then in year number 2, we take the dividend in year number 2 and we divide that by 1 plus K squared for 2 years. In year number 3, we take the dividend in year number 3 and divide that by 1 plus K to the third. On and on. And the book has this really bizarre example where a company pays us $100 per share for 3 years and then promptly goes out of business. And so we require a rate of return of 15%, which, dear students, is way too high in my humble opinion. But, hey, that's what they want. That's what they'll ask for. It doesn't mean they're going to get it. And so you take $100 divided by 1 plus 15%, 1.15, and then you take $100 and divide that by 1.15 squared, and then you take $100 and divide it by 1.15 to the third. And if you do those calculations on your exponential calculator, you'll see that it's worth about $228. But how many businesses pay 3 annual dividends and then go out of business? Plus, we keep using this term, present value. What does present value mean? What does the price at time zero? That's what they're trying to show you here, P sub zero. In other words, today. What's the price today? What does present value mean? Slide number 19. Present value is the value today of a lump sum or series of payments, that's what we're interested in, to be received at some future date. It's the opposite of future value. Now, you may remember future value from Business 121, Financial Planning and Money Management, or maybe you did the optional future value calculations back in Chapter 1, showing us that, yes, indeed, it's not a futile exercise to invest. We can build substantial wealth over time. And so present value is just the other side of the coin. It's the inverse. So, for example, if you're going to put away $10,000 and get 8%, in 10 years, we expect that value to be $21,589. And there's the formula. But don't worry, we use the tables. You don't do the formula. So in other words, I know if I get 8% that $10,000 in 10 years will be $21,589. Now what if I know I'm going to get $21,589, or I expect to get that, in 10 years, and my rate of return is 8%. Well, then we just do the formula in reverse. You see, it's the same formula, but now it's at the bottom. So today, that $21,589 that I'm going to get 10 years from now is equal to $10,000. So what would you rather have? $10,000 today or $21,589 in 10 years? Well, if your required rate of return is 8%, you don't care. They're equivalent. They're the same, except one you're going to get 10 years from now and one you get now. Present value and future value are just two sides of the same coin. In finance, present value tells us what the future value is worth today. So, slide number 20. Did the formula for the dividend discount model scare you? This formula has that present value calc built into it. But we mortals simply use the present value tables. Just as we did in Business 121, Financial Planning and Money Management, or Chapter 1, where if you did the optional future value calculations. The formula then becomes the dividend in year number 1 times the present value multiplier. That's what PVM stands for year number 1. The dividend in year number 2 times the present value multiplier for year number 2. The dividend in year number 3 times the present value multiplier for year number 3, etc., etc., etc. And that's equal to our present value. And we use tables. Slide number 21. Let's do the same example over again, but let's use the present value multipliers from the present value table. Now, I want you to print this out. Put it next to you because you're going to refer to it often. And yeah, I know it's kind of old school, but we like to learn the old school way, and then we'll show you some spreadsheets that make life a lot easier. We're going to do 3 annual dividends of $100 per share with a required rate of return of 15%, which again is way too much in my humble opinion. And if you go across to 15% down to year number 1, now do it, go do it right now, okay, 8.870. So that's the present value multiplier. We would take $100 times 0.870, and that gives us $87. We would then take $100 and go to year number 2. Go ahead, do it. Go across to 8. Have you printed out the present value table? Of course, in the face-to-face class, we pass these things out. You go across to 15% down 2 years, and you'll see that's 0.756. So that's $75.60. Year number 3, go down to year number 3, and you'll see it's 0.658, or $65.80. You add those three up, and you get $228.40, which is a little bit off 8 cents, but that's because of the precision of the table. If the table had more digits, we would be bang on. We'd be exactly the same. So what's the present value of the future streams of dividends? If we are, again, if we're expecting 15%, which again I think is way too much, dear students, $100 in 1 year today is worth $87. What would you rather have, $100 a year from now or $87 today? If your required rate of return is 15%, it's the same. You don't care. In 2 years, that $100 is going to be worth to us today $75.60. In 3 years, that third payment of $100 will be worth $65.80. And I know it's a little tricky to get your head around, but it really isn't that difficult. What would you rather have, $100 today or $87 in 1 year? If it's 15%, they're the same. $100 today or $75.60 in 2 years? Again, if it's a required rate of return of 15%, they're the same. Now, you change the rate of return and the numbers all change. And we're going to do that because we're not going to use 15%, dear students. The sum of the present values of the future dividend cash flows equals our perceived value of the stock. Now, if that is still driving you nuts, stop, listen to it again, but realize that the calculations are a lot easier than the concepts. The concepts drive people nuts. Once you do the calculations, just as we did in the previous presentation, you go, well, this isn't that hard. It's not. The calculations are actually very simple. It's just trying to understand what you're calculating and, what is this number looking at me? What does it mean? Well, it means that's what it's worth to me today if I get these amounts in the future. It's a big if, of course, right? Slide 22. Now, let's take a look at various variations of this model. And there are many, folks. The simplest is called the zero growth model, which really isn't covered in our book because it's just a very simple view of the next model we'll take a look at. But it assumes that dividends will continue at a fixed rate indefinitely into the future. So this version of the formula of the model is a very simple formula. You take your annual dividends, which are not growing, and you divide them by the required rate of return. And again, the required rate of return is what we expect. Do we want 4%, 5%, 8%, 9%, 10%? We decide. That's our expected rate of return. So now we have an example of a company that's paying $3 a share, that's been paying $3 a share, and we expect to continue to pay $3 a share. If our required rate of return is 6%, then we expect this company to be worth about $50. Does this look familiar? Well, if you like to play with math, play with formulas, really what we're looking at is just another view of the dividend yield. Slide 23. You see, the value of the stock is equal to the dividends divided by the required rate of return. Well, if you go back to Chapter 5, do you remember the dividend yield formula? We take the annual dividends and we divide it by the market price. So really all we're doing is we're swapping the dividend yield for the required rate of return and the value of the stock for the market price of the stock. We're just playing with the formula, just swapping things around. And so what we're saying is, look, we want this stock not for its growth, zero growth model, but we're looking at this stock for its dividend. And we're going to value the stock based on the dividends that we get and, of course, our required rate of return. So if that didn't make any sense, don't worry about it because the calculation is very, very simple. Slide 24. Here's a real-life example. Consolidated Edison. That's New York's utility company. Been around for over 120-some-odd years, right? Their current price as of September 7th is $80.80 a share, and they're currently paying $2.86 in annual dividends. And like most utilities, they're not growing very much. unless the area that the utility is in is growing, I mean, people are turning on their lights and boiling their water and the like. And so, yeah, utilities are for the most part, very stable is what we'd expect from a utility. So if our required rate of return is 8%, then we would take the annual dividend, $2.86, and divide it by 8% and get $35.75. The stock is selling for $80. So we believe at 8% it's worth $35.70. Yeah, it's overvalued. Well, what if we reduce our required rate of return to 5%? Again, this is what we expect to get. You take the $2.86 divided by 5%, and that's $57. It's selling for $80. Right, it's still too expensive for our blood. With a market price of $80, the stock is yielding 3.52%. So, we have to be willing to accept a return of 3.5% to believe that this stock is worth $80. The zero growth model works well for stable income producing stocks. Hint, hint, hint. When you see a utility on a worksheet or on an assignment or on an exam, which model are you going to use? Very good. The zero growth model. I heard you say it. Slide 25. Now, this is one of my favorite models with a very bad name. The constant perpetual growth model. But doesn't constant and perpetual mean the same thing, kind of, right? Constant perpetual growth model. The Department of Redundancy Department. This will assume that dividends will grow at a specified rate perpetually into the future. But perpetual is a very cool word because when you say it, you get to spit on your friends. I'm using the constant perpetual growth model. Well, really, folks, it's the same model that we just looked at, except we've added a few little things here. Remember, the zero growth model was annual dividends divided by the required rate of return. Well, we take those annual dividends, but now what we do is we multiply them times 1 plus the constant growth rate. We're adding something to say that these dividends are growing in the future. And then we take the bottom part, we reduce our required rate of return by the constant growth rate. So really, the dividend, the constant perpetual growth model version of the dividend discount model is the general case, where the zero growth model was the special case. Because if you plug in zero, this is for you folks who like to play with formulas. If you plug in zero, then it's the same formula. Zero growth, right. So we did the zero growth rate just to show you a special case of the dividend discount model, constant perpetual growth model. And now we're going to add the fact that some companies grow their dividends. And boy, don't we love companies that grow their dividends. Yes, we do, as we'll see. And so here's an example from the book. This is from the sixth edition. They're basically, whatever edition you have, or you go to the library or whatever, they're in this pretty much the same place, around same page. You take a company that's paying $10 per share, and if they're growing their dividend at 5%, and again, we require a rate of return of 15%, which I think is way too high, dear students. We take $10 times the 1 plus 5%, 1.05, and we divide that by 15% minus 5%. So $10.50 is $10 times 1.05. 15% minus 5% is 10%, so that's 0.1, right? So $10.50 divided by 0.1 is $105. So we believe if we require a rate of return of 15% and this company continues to grow their dividend at 5%, do they have to do that? Are they any no, they're not under any obligation. They could stop their dividend payments at any time. Yes, so we believe it's worth $105, and this is good for companies with consistent dividend growth. So let's now take a look at some real-life examples. You may have heard of 3M, or maybe not. They're a company that's been around a long time. It's kind of a silly name. It used to be called Minnesota Mining and Materials, so ha ha ha, 3M. This was the 1950s and 60s when they started changing names of companies from Standard Oil to Esso to Exxon, from Aluminum Corporation of America to Alcoa. And here we had Minnesota Mining and Materials, which sounded old fuddy-duddy, 3M. And you may not have heard of them, but folks, have you ever used Scotch tape or Post-it notes? They make thousands of thousands of products. Most all of them are flat. Yeah. So their current market price was $212.57 on the 7th of September. And they're paying $5.44 in annual dividends. Again, now we have to have a growth rate here. Let's assume that the dividends are growing at 8%. So let's just say they're growing at 8%. if our required rate of return is 13%, which again, students, I think is too high, I like 8, 9, 10%, then we take the $5.44 and multiply that times 1.08. And we divide that, again, 1 plus the growth rate. Make sure you understand this. Stop the presentation or ask questions. Either face-to-face class, you can raise your hand, but you can't do that here. Divided by 13% minus 8%. So $5.44 times 1.8 is about $5.87, 88 cents. You know, you don't have to be too precise here. I went out the four digits, but you don't have to. And then 13% minus 8% is 5% or 0.05, and do that, and you'll find that we think the stock at 13% is worth $117.50. But it's selling at $212. So is that a good buy for us potentially? No. But what if we lowered our required rate of return to 10%? Then the formula becomes 5.44 times 1.08. That doesn't change because they're growing their dividends at 8%, we're assuming. But now we take 10% minus 8%. So the same $5 and about 88 cents, 87 cents, divided by 0.02. And we believe the stock is worth $294, almost $300. So you see how sensitive the model is to our choice of our required rate of return? And this is something that people sometimes have a hard time understanding. What are you interested in? And of course, you are just one investor. There are millions of them out there looking at the stock and deciding for themselves what kind of return they want. And the Germans have a saying that doesn't translate well into English, but I think it really encapsulates what's going on out there. That is what makes horse races. If everybody bet on the same horse, right? Everyone's looking at the horses and saying, you know, I think this one's better, this one has a better chance. And that's the same thing true here. Everyone's looking at a stock or whatever investment and deciding what they want from it and what they like about it and what they don't like about it. So if that makes sense, great. If it doesn't, forget it. Slide number 27, Intel. You ever hear of them? Right. You're probably watching this, listening to this on a machine that has Intel chips in it. The current price is $46.45, currently paying $1.20 in annual dividends. Let's assume the dividends are growing around 8% a year. And again, if our required rate of return is 13%, then we take $1.20 times 1.08 divided by that 13% minus 8%, which gives us about $1.30. Divided by 0.05, or almost $26. Well, my goodness, it's selling for $46. Not a very good deal in our humble opinion. Doesn't quite measure up to our 13% rate. But let's, again, lower our standards. Let's lower our required rate of return to 10%. So now we have $1.20 times 1.08, divided by 10% minus 8%. And again, if you do the calculations, it's about $1.30 divided by 0.02. You get almost $65. So the model says that Intel is undervalued if we only require a 10% rate of return. So let's think. If we were to consider Intel as a potential investment, who else would we need to investigate? Who are Intel's competitors? Right, and in the investment club, we have one of the students is really excited about AMD. AMD is the main competitor to Intel, but they're not the only one. There are others out there. ARM, what is that company? They're the ones that started out in the mobile world, and everybody's competing against everybody else, folks. I mean, they're all trying to get into each other's cookie jar. So we have to look at their competitors too. Good, and that's what you're going to do when you consider potential investments, right? Look at the competitors. Yeah, of course you will. Thank you for doing that. Thank you for nodding your head. Yes. Slide number 28. Target, that fabulously exclusive French department store, Target. that when you were in and you see your friend, you kind of walk the other way because you don't want them to know that you shop at Target, and they don't want you to know that you shop at Target. Anyway, current market price is $88.74, currently paying $2.56 in annual dividends, and let's assume the dividends are growing at 8% per year. If our required rate of return is 13%, then we run through the numbers at 256 times $1.08 divided by 13% minus 8%. And then you have about $202.76 or so divided by 0.05, and that's $55.30. So much for being bombarded by the color red. Now, what if our required return rate of return were only 10%? Again, running the numbers, I hope you're doing the calculations. Pause the presentation. Make sure you do the calculations on your 99-cent calculator. And you get, maybe you bought it at Target. $2.56 times 0.01 and 0.08, or about $2.76, $2.77. 10% minus 8%, 0.02. And Target, $140 almost, $138? Selling for $88? You know, I know Target does not have a reputation for being the most elegant store in the neighborhood, but it's pretty darn profitable. Right. And even though it has yet, and I don't even know if they are, they have yet to go international. So you look at Costco and Walmart and Home Depot and they're all going international. Even you go down to Tijuana, you see Smart and Final. But Target's still the United States-based, but they're a very profitable company. Slide 29, Pfizer. Who are Pfizer? Well, maybe you looked at them back in Chapter 5 because they're a very big drug company, pharmaceuticals. And their current market price is $42.20 as of September 7th. And they're currently paying $1.36 in annual dividends. If we again assume that the dividends are growing at around 8% per year, if our required rate of return is 13%, that's $1.36 times 1.08 divided by 13% minus 8%, or $1.47, close, you know, don't be too precise, divided by 0.05, and that's equal to a little less than $30. Pfizer doesn't look that good if we want 13%. But what if we lower our rate of return to 10%? Then we run the numbers and we find that Pfizer's worth about $73. And if we're happy with 10%, a Pfizer appears to be a pretty darn good deal. Do people stop taking their medications just because the economy's in a recession? No. Who do we have to look? Oh, we have to look at all the other drug companies. Oh, yes, there's a lot of competition, and they're always looking for the next blockbuster drug that will ameliorate. You like that word? Not cure. You don't want a drug that cures the disease, because then you can't sell to them every day. You want a drug that deals with the symptoms of a disease so that the person never gets better. I know, I apologize. I'm a very cynical person, but those are the kind of drugs that make, you know, with statins, if you have high blood pressure, not high blood pressure, high cholesterol, Lipitor, right? You gotta take the drug every day, and that's the kind of drug they love. Slide number 30, Altria. Who are they? Well, you know them as Philip Morris, right? They changed their name a long time ago. And then they spun off their international sales, and now that's called Philip Morris International. But this is the company, Altria, that sells cigarettes in the United States. And the current market price is about $61, paying $3.20. Let's assume that the dividends are also growing about 8% a year. So if we have the same required rate of return of 13%, then $3.20 times 1.08 divided by 13% minus 8% gives us $3.45, divided by 0.05, or $69.12. Wow! Our model is saying that Altria is worth $69 if we expect 13%, and it's selling for almost $61. What a buy! if you conveniently ignore the fact that tobacco kills 400,000 Americans every year? Would you buy Altria? Would you buy a company whose product, when used as directed, kills their consumers? Well, as a matter of fact, it's been a pretty darn good stock over decades, folks. And I'll never forget an interview on Wall Street Week, which is long gone, but it was a long-running show about investing in Wall Street when people really weren't that interested back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s, until the 80s and 90s, and everybody got interested. And it was on that communist, Bolshevik, left-wing, liberal channel, PBS. Figured that one out. And Louis Rukeyser, who is actually a very good writer, too. You should check out his books. Passed away about 10 years ago. He asked a gentleman who was a money manager who was very bullish on Philip Morris and the other tobacco stocks a very pointed question, because this gentleman was Mormon, Latter-day Saints, and they don't smoke, right? And they don't. And he said, "Now you're Mormon, aren't you, sir?" "Oh yes, Mr. Rukeyser." "And you don't smoke or drink?" "No, no, Mr. Rukeyser." And he says, "How do you square this round hole here? How do you figure this out? I mean, you are morally opposed to these things, but here you are investing in them." And his answer was very simple. He said, "Look, there's no secrets here. People know that this stuff is very dangerous, and yet they smoke it anyway. And so we take a very practical, pragmatic look, and we're going to invest in it. If they're going to buy it, and how much does it cost to make a cigarette, folks? It's a little over a penny. They sell 20 in a pack for $10, maybe 80 if you're lucky. A lot of that is taxes to get people to stop smoking, because you'll hear people say, "Oh, what does the government care anyway?" For every dollar they get from taxes in for cigarettes, the government pays $9 in health care. No, our society, or not just the government, because some people have health insurance, but $9 for every $1 that the government gets in taxes. So, yeah. Hey, what else is coming down the pike? Who will win big when marijuana becomes legal? Who do you think, right? Right. Once it becomes legal, and Philip Morris and Reynolds and British American Tobacco, they're going to rush in. Oh, yeah. Okay, so now let's continue. Who's that? Who is that?
Baiano.
Yeah, I'm here. Who are you?
You know who it is.
It's my conscience.
Come clean.
Come clean about what?
Fess up.
Fess up about what?
Where did you get the assumed dividend growth, huh?
I made it up.
Huh?
I made it up. All these companies are growing their dividends faster than 8%.
That's better.
Don't you just hate it when your conscience comes a-calling? Look, folks, slide number 31. The constant perpetual growth model is very sensitive not only to our required rate of return, but to the assumed growth rate of dividends. And the recent dividend growth rates of 3M, Intel, Target, Pfizer, Altria are all 8% or higher. Intel, 8.2%. Pfizer, 8.5%. Altria, 10%. 3M, 12.5%. And Target, I don't know how they can continue to do this, folks, but they've been growing their dividend at over 16%. But the model does not work if the required rate of return is equal to or less than the dividend growth rate. You get division by zero, or you get negative prices, which don't make any sense. Therefore, we should actually raise our expected rates of return for all these companies. All are actually better buys than what the model is telling us for our 10%, 13% rates of return. But these are companies, blue chip companies with long history of rising dividends, but they are not alone. You check out ExxonMobil, check out Procter & Gamble, United Technologies, Abbott Labs and AbbVie, which AbbVie spun off from Abbott Labs, Johnson Controls, Microsoft, check out Ford, right? So, people ask me, aren't stocks really high? And I say some of them are outrageously expensive, as we saw, you know, Amazon and Netflix and companies like that. But others are not that expensive, in my humble opinion. Now, what's the kicker? when's the next recession? Right? If you knew when the next recession was, you'd be able to get out before the organic matter hits the ventilating device and all these growth rates plummet. But we can't. Nobody can. I mean, maybe there's some genius out there who can do it, but the people who... I like the one guy, Stansberry Research. He predicts a disaster every year. And then he comes back and says, look, I was right in 2008. But you were wrong in 2004, 3, 4, 6, 7, 9, 10, 11, 12. Yeah, so someday we're going to get hit with a recession and stocks are going to fall. But that's when you are not going to panic, right? Right. And you're going to do the models again and say, okay, you know, this is a good time to invest. Well, my portfolio is down 27%. Slide 32. The constant growth rate. This assumes dividends will grow at a specified rate for a specified number of years. And really, folks, again, we're just adding more to the previous model. Here's the constant perpetual growth rate, the dividends at time zero now, times 1 plus the growth rate divided by our expected rate of return minus the growth rate. But then we add this term to account for the growth for a number of years, which is just more of plugging in numbers. Do we have to know how to do this? No, I'm not going to ask you to do this one. This model takes the constant perpetual growth rate one step further, adding a term to account for a constant growth for a number of years. Just as the constant perpetual growth rate evolved from the zero growth rate, adding the additional term to account for the constant growth of dividends. And then it gets even weirder and more exotic, and the math people just love it. On slide 33, the two-stage dividend growth model, which takes the constant growth model, which is right here, the first two terms, and adds this term to show for a slower, presumably slower growth rate once the company matures. Folks, many years ago, Benjamin Graham warned against using overly sophisticated mathematical models to value stocks. And his student, one of his students, Warren Buffett, still uses a desktop calculator to do the calculations, right? He doesn't have all these impressive, exotic, amaze your friends, but does it work? I don't think so. This model may look very impressive, especially to those who love math, but it has some serious problems. It's very difficult to accurately predict future dividend growth during the initial fast stage of a stock, because the fast growth stage of a stock, companies usually do not pay significant dividends, or none. But then all of a sudden they start paying. The one example is Microsoft. For years just did not want to pay a dividend. That would tell the world, you know, we're past our huge growth spurt. And they had some $60-70 billion in cash. Yeah. So they, okay, you know, now we're all grown up. It's time to start paying dividends. And then they started paying dividends. So this model, yeah. But the reason I show it to you is to show you that, you know, there are all kinds of crazy, scary stuff goes on in the name of accurately predicting stock prices, which we know can't accurately be predicted. Right. All we're doing here, folks, is tilting the odds in our favor, in my humble opinion. Because if we stick with these kind of companies that consistently pay dividends and grow their dividends over time, these are companies that have their roots deep in the ground, then, you know, we're not going to become wealthy overnight, but we're going to become wealthy, unless the world ends, in which case it doesn't matter where your money is. Slide 34, observations of the dividend discount models. How do you use them for a company that isn't paying any dividends? Well, the simple answer is you can't. The constant perpetual growth model is usually an unrealistic assumption, except for those very large companies, as we said, that have their roots deep in the economy. And dividend growth rates are difficult to estimate. With large cap, big companies, well-established companies, historical growth rates may be useful, but that doesn't mean they're going to continue in the future. But with many fast-growing companies in new industries, it's almost impossible. But the problems of the dividend discount models withstanding, repeat after me, so I gotta hear you now. The value of a stock.
The value of a stock.
Is based on the present value.
Is based on the present value.
Of its future cash flows. Yes. Now. Go back and do these over again, and then do the worksheet, the problems in the worksheet that have to do with the zero growth model and the constant perpetual growth model. And there's an answer key and commentary, because in our next chapter, oh boy, this is going to be so much fun, because we're going to see a model that, in my humble opinion, really shows you the reason that the best mutual fund companies and the best money managers take about a 3 to 4 to 5 year time frame. Remember back when we looked at mutual funds and we looked at the turnover rate, and we said for a stock fund, 30%, 20, 25, 30% was a very good, and you know, that's not the only thing you got to look at. You have to look at their rate of return that they've been able to rack up. But then they're thinking, you know, what's this company going to be like in 3, 4, 5 years? Which is hard enough, right? It's impossible to know, to try to determine where it's going to be in 2, 3 months. That's, you know, that's the vagaries of the stock market. But in terms of what's this company, you're not investing in a stock, you're investing in a company, in my humble opinion. Okay, so, boy, go back and do this over again, but see you in our next presentation, and you are going to be so amazed. Thank you for being in our class. We are so happy that you are here with us.